Hello, welcome to the latest Grazia Life Advice. I'm Rhiannon Evans, and as always, we are about to hear six life tips from another brilliant woman. Right at the end, as ever, we'll also get the worst tip they've ever been given, and this week's is a good one. This time, a presenter, DJ, and podcaster who's been part of our lives since she became a newsreader on MTV back in the day.
Hello, I'm Edith Bowman, and I am... Well, my seven-year-old son says I talk for a living. So I like to think of myself as a broadcaster, but I like to talk, and I think it's just because I'm nosy. So my name's Edith Bowman and I'm nosy.
I love that. Edith is basically radio royalty, and on her long-running series Soundtracking, she interviews filmmakers about their choice of music in movies.
I grew up watching so many amazing films, and music is such a big part of the world of film, both in terms of when they play a track that you recognise or a beautiful piece of score that can make you feel in a way that you never expected to feel. So I didn't think there was a conversation being had about that, so I wanted to start one.
Coming up, confusion from Edith's kids over who exactly is her former partner in DJing, Colin Murray.
The other day, Spike, who I don't actually think's met Colin, he must have when he was really little, but he won't remember. And he's like, "Mum, why are there so many pictures of this man in the house?"
And a piece of life advice that was hard won over a decade of hard living. After partying and burning candles at both ends enough times, Edith's here to tell you to pace yourself.
I can't remember the year, but it was a V festival. Yeah. I went down on the Friday, loads of mates there. I think we were staying in a caravan. You know, you're finishing off the rider and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, I didn't see Saturday, and then sort of sheepishly got back on site on the Sunday with very large dark glasses and a bottle of water constantly at my side.
It's a delight to welcome Edith to the podcast. Hi, Edith. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Rhiannon. It's so nice to see you. I can see you. People can just hear us, but I can see you.
Yeah.
I'm good. You know, the sun's out today, which always puts a spring in my step and a smile on my face. Yeah, I'm all good. Thanks. What about you?
Yeah, no, I'm fine. Sat here in my bedroom. And we were just talking about the fact that we're still in, well, lockdown tier three, whatever we're in at the moment. But your project Soundtracking, your podcast has been able to keep going throughout all of lockdown. And so can you tell people first what Soundtracking is and if they've not heard it before?
Of course. So I've been very lucky that, you know, I've been a broadcaster for so many years, and so much of that has encompassed a lot of music, a lot of film. So I wanted to enthuse about film and music because, you know, I grew up watching so many amazing films, and music is such a big part of the world of film, both in terms of when they play a track that you recognize, you know, or a beautiful piece of score that can make you feel in a way that you never expected to feel. So I didn't think there was a conversation being had about that, so I wanted to start one, and that's why I launched Soundtracking. So I speak to all different types of people from the world of film and music sometimes about their relationship with music, both in terms of the films they make, but also the films and the music that they love. So we are entering our fifth year, which is bonkers, because it's just me and my friend Ben that make it. You know, it's a proper passion project, and we've been so lucky. You know, we've spoken to directors and actors and writers, producers, composers, music supervisors. So yeah, every episode, nearly 240 of them, are unique. Every conversation is different. Every conversation has a different soundtrack to it, because what we do as well is we create a Spotify playlist for every episode so that you can, once you've listened to it, go and listen to the playlist and hear all the music that we've talked about within the episode in its entirety.
Yeah.
I love it. Can you tell?
Well, I love it too. And it's so popular. Is there anybody who is still on your wish list who you need to do?
Oh my God, yeah. Do you know what as well is there's still people that are on the wish list that have already been on that I need to have back.
Okay.
John Williams, obviously, because Star Wars is kind of the reason that I do this podcast, really.
Okay.
In that when I was a kid and watched Star Wars for the first time, before you see anything, you hear that fanfare, da-da, and then the crawl happens. You know, whether it's Star Wars or E.T. or all those other amazing Indiana Jones, he's so synonymous with me in cinema and growing up watching cinema. So he's on the top of my list. But I contact his reps every week going, hi, me again, just to see if I can get a little bit of access to him. But fingers crossed one day. So he's definitely up there. And Scorsese as well is up there as well.
I absolutely love it. And I love how involved you are, because I think now there's a whole raft, isn't there, of like celeb podcasts that, you know, they just turn up for 10 minutes.
Everyone's doing them. Exactly. Yeah. Here's what you're going to say, or here's a list of things to talk about. Yeah, I mean, I hope to be doing this till I'm John Williams' age. So, you know, there's plenty more hundreds of episodes of soundtracking to come, hopefully.
Fantastic. So you're here today to talk about your best piece of advice. We've got some absolutely great ones I can see here on the list. So let's get started. Could you tell me your first piece of advice?
So my first piece of advice came from my friend Natalie, and I was having a bit of a problem with taking on board and being affected by what people thought of me, and particularly people who don't get me or like me, you know. And her advice was, it's none of your business what other people think of you.
Okay.
And I think that that's a really healthy piece of advice to take on board. And I've definitely used that, both in terms of the public, you know, and social media and things like that, but also with work. You know, you kind of miss out on jobs. You get fired from jobs, or you get moved on from jobs. And sometimes that's down to new people coming in and they just don't get what you do. That's fine. It's got nothing to do with you. You know, it's like, if I know that I am doing the best job possible and being really truthful about what I do, then that's all I should be worried about. Listen, I don't Google myself and I don't search myself on social media, but when I've done something and I'm interested to know what the reaction's been, I will occasionally go on to Twitter or whatever and search. It can be terrifying and it can be soul destroying. But what I love doing every now and again is replying to people, because it's like they're not expecting you to reply, because they're a faceless kind of, you know, algorithm out there who's throwing, you know, abuse or whatever your way, and they really do not expect you to respond. So every now and again, if I see something, I'll respond. And 9 times out of 10, they'll come back and they'll go, oh, I'm really sorry, I was just having a bad day or whatever sort of thing. And it's like, well, just think about if I was having a bad day and you've just said that. So just take a moment, for any trolls out there, just take a moment before you pass judgment or make an opinion and put yourself in that person's shoes. I do live by it, apart from the odd occasion where I'm intrigued about something, and so I'll go and have a look. And yeah, it's funny sometimes though.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to say. It's one of those pieces of advice we all maybe know, but it's so hard sometimes in the moment.
We all want affirmation for what we're doing. We want people. I mean, it's really interesting because I really crave feedback from work stuff, you know, and you hardly ever get it. Yeah. People are so driven by telling you what they think you want to hear. And for me, you know, I love what I do, but I never, ever imagine or expect to be the best at what I do. I do my best, but I can always learn. I can always learn about everything. And so the only way I'm going to learn is to get constructive criticism. And so I kind of crave that from work stuff, going, you know, in terms of, listen, you maybe need to do that, or you maybe need to not do that. That would be so helpful, but it's really hard to get. And I'm not the type of person that can listen and be constructive to myself. We used to have to do these things at Radio 1 and pretty much every radio station that I've worked at. They're called snoop sessions. It's such a bad word to use as well, because you have to listen back to the show, to show, without the music, and pick apart every link. God. And be, yeah, it's pain. It's so hard. Oh my God. Horrendous. Horrendous. I don't wish it on anybody.
You did just touch then on work opportunities, and your second piece of advice is that what's meant for you won't pass you by. You said your mum told you that. And when did that come about, and how's that affected you?
I mean, mum tells me that on a weekly basis, to be honest, because I do find it really hard to if I don't get jobs, to not take it personally, because I'm really hard on myself. And so I think she probably used it first with like a breakup. That was probably the time that she used it, when I was dumped from a high ground by someone, you know, and that it's another alternative to there's plenty more fish in the sea. It's just less annoying. And yeah. And that was one of the things I remember her saying to me about through that whole thing was, listen, what's meant for you will not pass you by, sort of thing. And it's so true. And I do believe in that kind of, it's really weird. I was talking to my brother about this the other day, because we lost a really dear member of the family a couple of weeks ago. And he was talking about how he's like, I don't believe in God. And I was like, well, I don't either, but I believe in something. I believe in there being, you know, and I think that whole what's meant for you is, it's in the stars. It's in the kind of, you know, it's, there's a karma in the world, I think, that kind of unveils things to you and can present things to you or remove things for you as well. And I kind of believe in that whole sort of thing. I guess that's kind of what the good side of religion is in terms of having a faith in something, not necessarily a God. It's quite a deep thing to get into, but yeah.
And is it your mum, is she someone you turn to a lot when you're going through things in life?
Yeah, totally. And you know, she had me when she was 19, so we have a really close relationship because she was so young. She was, in fact, so I was up in Scotland last week and went to say my goodbyes to Nani, and Mum had loads of old albums and stuff out, as she would. She was like, look, there's you singing Happy Birthday to me at my 21st. Wow. And that's like bonkers to think about. But just thinking that I was a toddler and she was 21. It's like, oh, you were so young. But we have a really close relationship, and it's interesting how it's now at that point as well where we need each other as much as the other needs the one, if that makes sense. So whereas like she was, you know, she's always been my mum, and I've always gone to her with what I need, and mum, can you do this? Can you help me with that? It's kind of, it's interesting how that it's a circle now, in terms of she needs me for certain things more, or I'm kind of looking out for her more than I was when I was younger and stuff as well. And she's kind of one of a few people that I know that I can go to about absolutely anything. And that could be about her as well, because we joke about her, we call her Eleanor I'm Fine Bowman, because it's always, you're right, I'm fine, you know, even though quite clearly she's not. So we joke about that, about she's kind of, she absorbs so much, and she's always that person that everybody goes to be honest. So she's always been a fixer for so many people.
Yeah. I think that's the great thing about being mums. And now you're in that position yourself. Do you look forward to doing that in years to come as well? Always being at the end of the phone.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's quite funny that I talk about, it was a couple of, I had an email from an American publicist a couple of weeks ago after an interview that I'd done. And she just sort of said, God, they've never opened up. Like I've never heard them talk like that in an interview before. You've got a lovely way of kind of getting things out of people. And I was joking about it the other day about someone saying, oh, you know, even the postman feels like he needs to offload on me when he sort of delivers his post every day. So I must have this kind of, I don't know, which is lovely to think that people feel comfortable to share with me in a way. Yeah. I love that. That makes me feel really, really kind of privileged in a way, I think. But yeah, postman's wife was like sent him back to work because she was desperate for new wardrobes, you see, so...
I love that. I mean, perfect skill for a broadcaster to have people open up to them. And I guess does feed into your third piece of advice, which is don't try and be anything but yourself.
Yeah.
Has that always been easy for you? Or?
No. I mean, when I started in TV, I was like, I had an idea of what I thought a TV presenter was meant to be, you know, MTV. It was kind of like, this is what I have to be. And I can't remember why, but I watched back, like my mum, bless her, had recorded, obviously, my first ever thing. And it was me doing a news bulletin on MTV. And I kind of do this kind of turn around in a swivel chair. And this weird accent that was like, I don't know why. And it definitely goes back to being told, which we'll get to later, about my accent and people sort of having a problem with my accent. And it took me a while to feel comfortable in that I shouldn't be changing for anybody. I shouldn't be trying to be something I'm not. And I learned that quite quick, actually, just because it just didn't feel right. I knew that I could do a better job by just being me and being the same person on screen or on mic that I am off. Mm. And also it's less energy. That's always the advice I always give any, you know, students or new people coming into the world of broadcasting. What advice would you give? And it's like, well, A, find something that you really love and you're passionate about to be your starting point, and it's genuine. And don't try and be that person that you think that person wants you to be. Be true to yourself, because the facade will fall, and you can't keep it up all the time. When I watch people that I know they're being something else on screen or on mic than they are in real, I just don't believe them. I don't connect with them, because there's something between them and me.
It's obviously worked for you. I mean, thinking about you back on MTV, I remember watching you
105 years ago.
Well, listening to you through Radio 1 days. I mean, a lot of us have had a lot of your life now. I mean, is it weird? Do people feel like they know you? You're part of their whole cultural lives, really?
Yeah, it's so nice. And I've been so lucky with what I've done, but I'm so excited about what I still want to do. Yeah. Colin's been doing this great, Colin Murray, that used to do Radio 1, has been doing this amazing show on 5 Live called The Lock-In. He touches on really big issues in mental health, and he's just doing an amazing job. Colin's one of those really brilliant broadcasters that's just got no fear. And he asked me to go on the show a couple of times, and the response that we get after we've kind of been on the radio again together is just, it's so lovely. And it just makes me kind of really happy. It was so funny. My kids were like, you know, it's ages since my kids have seen him, actually, but there's like, the other day, Spike, who I don't actually think's met Colin. He must have when he was really little, but he won't remember. And he's like, Mum, why are there so many pictures of this man in the house? Because I've just got loads of little pictures of us all over, kind of, you know, and lovely things that we did together. And it was so really funny. I was like, God, yeah, there are. There's probably more than I have of my brother up in the house. It's so funny.
I love that. We'll be back with more from Edith after this. We're here with Edith Bowman, and let's go straight into your fourth piece of advice.
So my next piece of advice is slow and steady. I mean, it's a good piece of advice for life in general, isn't it? And weird, I find that, you know, what we've all been through this in 2020 has almost encouraged that in a way. Like I'm a multitasker. I can't just be doing one thing, and I definitely can't be doing nothing. Yeah. So I was always like running around at 110 miles an hour, doing this, that, making lunch whilst also bulk cooking 3 other things, you know. And lockdown's definitely encouraged me to slow down. And I also think as well that slow and steady is such a good thing to relate to so many things. I mean, I think that my career was definitely has been slow and steady. You know, I'm not a headline grabber. I never wanted to be anyway. But, you know, in terms of I feel like I'm in a really nice place because I'm getting to do the things that I want to do. And that's been down to a lot of hard work and a lot of patience as well. And yeah, just slowing down a bit, I think, is a really good thing to do in life, really.
Hard though, especially as, you know, a much overused phrase, a working mother.
Totally. I remember I had my diary open. I can't remember who it was. And they were like, bloody hell, that looks like some kind of flight path, kind of, you know, air traffic control thing. I was like, no, that's just my diary, Tom's diary, the kids' kind of social diary, all that stuff. And what I've started to do is remove one thing. So I'm always trying to do way too many things. And so if I remove one thing and just put it onto tomorrow's to-do list, then it just helps a bit. But listen, I couldn't have done, and I can't do it without help from people. You know, I get slightly annoyed sometimes when you see like working mums kind of, it's not showing off on social media, but kind of painting a kind of, oh, I'm amazing because I'm doing all this. And it's like, you are, but you're also not telling us what's going on behind the scenes. You know, how many nannies have you got? Because, you know, this is physically not possible. And I'm really lucky that we had great help with the kids when they were younger. We're a good team as well. I mean, Tom has been amazing during lockdown because I've been so busy with loads of different things. So I've been going into London to do things. I've been up in Scotland hosting like Scottish BAFTAs and things like that. I've had a constant flow of like press I hosted the Worldwide Wonder Woman press conference last week from my little office. It's bonkers. Like, hello, Gal Gadot and Patty Jenkins and Chris Pine and Kristen Wiig and Pedro Pascal. You're all amazing. Yes, this is my weird little cupboard studio.
Yeah.
Tom would have been on tour and it's allowed him to work on those projects, you know, writing music that he wouldn't have normally had the time to do. But he's been able to juggle that around being our main, you know, the main source of childcare for us. You know, it's about teamwork.
Honestly, Edith, I absolutely love you for saying all of that because I just think it's so harmful, isn't it, to mums? I know, like you see people and you think like, how are they doing that? And friends who, my little boy's smaller, but friends who have kids at school, you're like, well, your day's over at 3 o'clock. Like, it's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. I would not have been able to do, I mean, geez, 3/4 of the work, most of the work, to be honest, had it not been for, you know, going back to us having great nannies and people helping us. But that was a choice that I made as well, you know, in terms of I knew that it wouldn't have been healthy for me to be a stay-at-home mum. I needed to get the balance. I needed to make sure that I was being, and I hope I've been and am a good mum, but I also needed to do the thing that I love outside of being a mum, which is my work, because I love it so much. I love what I do. I know that if I wasn't able to do that, I would be a worse mum for it. It allows me to release, I guess, the kind of the part of me that is still me.
I am dying to get to your fifth piece of advice because I want to know the story okay. behind this. Tell me about learning to pace yourself.
So, I mean, I grew up in a little fishing village in Scotland and there was not very much to do. And I also grew up around a hotel. My mum and dad, my granddad started a little hotel in Scotland. So I was older than my years, basically. And I probably started drinking earlier than I should have. And that went on into my 20s, for sure. And I can't remember the year. But it was a V festival.
Yeah.
And it was a year that I wasn't working. I went down on the Friday, loads of mates there. I think we were staying in a caravan. And because I had, you know, it's that weird thing of like you do form great friendships with so many people in that world, musicians and bands and stuff. And we just, you know, loads of them were playing and you just, you know, you're finishing off the rider and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, I didn't see Saturday. So I missed an entire day of the festival because I could not move from my pokey little bed in the caravan, and then sort of sheepishly got back on site on the Sunday with very large dark glasses and a bottle of water constantly at my side. And saying that fateful phrase that I think is a phrase I've probably used the most in my life. I'm never drinking again. But yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Pace yourself, folks. That's what anyone says. Or what's your, when they ask me like about Glastonbury and stuff, what's your advice? Thankfully, I've never missed a day at Glastonbury in the times I've been, but it is like pace yourselves. There's too much to enjoy and see. And, you know, it goes back to the slow and steady thing, doesn't it?
And I think it's definitely something you can only learn with your own experience.
Totally.
If someone tells you to pace yourself, nah, not listening.
Totally. I don't drink as much as I used to. My kind of mid-20s to mid-30s was like it's a bit of a haze, to be honest. There are things that, oh, it's really weird. Like, I was talking about my mum having albums of things, and she had like a couple of albums of like clippings of things and pictures that I'd sent her of stuff. And I looked through it and it was like, oh my God, I'd totally forgotten about that. And it was only having a visual reference to it that was like almost unlocked a kind of memory file going, yeah, no, you did that. Yeah. It's like, oh my God.
Amazing. And your final piece of good advice. I love this. No one has ever said this before.
Oh, really?
Tell me what it is. Yeah.
So I very, very lovely got this piece of advice from Ludvig Göransson, who is an amazing composer that we've had on the podcast twice in the past year, actually. And he most recently composed the music for The Mandalorian. He did Tenet. He did Black Panther. He did Creed. Anyway, when I interviewed him last, I was like, listen, do you think you're ever too old to learn a musical instrument? And he says, no, you're never too old to learn to play a musical instrument. So that is my 2021 aim, to learn the cello.
Why cello?
Because I love the sound of it. And after speaking to, she's got the best name in the world, Hilde Gudnottir, who's the composer of The Joker, won the Oscar. She's amazing. She composed all that on the cello. And when she read the script, she sat with her cello and she could feel the character almost through when she was playing it, you know, in terms of she was trying to create the emotion of the character through playing this cello. And I did a documentary a few years ago and we spoke to this amazing scientist called Zoe Cormier, who wrote a book called Sex, Drugs and Rock and Roll. And one of the things she talks about in her book is that music is the only thing that connects both sides of our brain. And so that's why you can have a physical as well as an emotional reaction to music in the way that you can't with anything else. And I just love the idea of being able to connect that way. So, yeah, that's my... Come back to me in a year's time and I probably haven't even picked one up, but that's my aim, thanks to the advice from Ludvig Göransson.
Perfect. Mm. So we always like to finish on someone's worst piece of advice they've ever been given. So can you tell me this? This is crazy.
Well, so this, it's kind of weird because it's not really a piece of advice that I was given, but I love this in terms of almost fighting back on something that someone said to you. So when I got my first kind of work experience in radio, I was going to uni in Edinburgh and I managed to get local work experience at my local radio station. And the programme controller of that radio station, I did kind of bombard him with phone calls and letters going, give me work experience. So he did get me in for a chat and he said, and he sat behind his desk a bit like Jabba the Hutt and sort of said to me, so what do you want? And I was like, well, I said, I'd love to start off by getting work experience, but, you know, my aim is that at some point to have my own, to have a show, to be on air sort of thing. And he turned around to me and he said, I can't put someone with an accent like yours on the radio. And so, I mean, he gave me work experience and I did end up having two shows a week on the station after 2 years. You know, I think, you know, I don't know if he said it as a way to kind of like make me kind of prove it in a way.
Right.
But I kind of like when people say no to you in the right situation, it kind of spurs you on to kind of prove them wrong and to go, no, I know I can do this and I'm going to prove you wrong sort of thing. I like the challenge of that. So, yeah, that was his worst, you know, his worst piece of advice, really, aimed at me.
Yeah. Yeah. And you proved him wrong big time. Thank you, Edith. I've absolutely loved having you on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Edith Bowman, how great to spend time listening to her chat. I know we say this a lot, but if you have enjoyed the show, please do share a link on social media, tell someone who you think would also like it, and maybe leave us a review on your podcast player. We really, really appreciate all that support. Next time on Life Advice, we've got another superstar DJ and now novelist. Radio 1's Annie Mack will be joining us.
There's not that many women doing what I'm doing at this level. None, in fact, in terms of what I do. There wasn't back then anyway. So I'm the only one. And I feel like I need to be there so that people can see that someone is there doing that who is a woman.
See you then.